August 7, 2019. This is The Better Life. I am your host, Timothy Lawson, along with my better half, Eric Rosenthal. Sir, how are you?
I'm wonderful, man. How are you?
I'm well, Eric. I spent 4 days in the Pennsylvania wilderness hiking, enjoying life. I have emerged and am ready to talk gambling, betting, and all things that that lie within our favorite hobby.
Well, sounds good. Let's do it.
Let's do it. Eric, living a better life means betting the NFL or betting football in general. And it is right around the corner, sir. It is right around the corner. For some of us, it's already started. If you if you got a little degen in you, you may have bet the Hall of Fame game.
I definitely bet the Hall of Fame game. Are you kidding me?
What action did you have on the Hall of Fame game?
I had Denver and I had the under. It was a good day.
Okay, that is a good day.
Yeah.
Very good. I maybe bet two games all preseason. Maybe. I know that there's a lot of professional bettors that can find value in preseason games. I am a recreational gambler, and I just don't pay enough attention to news and coach conferences, stuff like that, to sort of pick off the key bits of information that one may need to find some opportunities of value. So I likely won't have much going on in the preseason, but because the Hall of Fame game technically kicks off the NFL season, I wanted to briefly talk about ways that you can bet the NFL or football in general going into the fall and winter months. And we even have some audio from our friend Ed on a way that he likes to get action down. First, Eric, you and I both bet college and NFL. That's right.
Correct.
And both of us, I think, have a wide variety of ways that we get action down. Is that also accurate, you think?
Yeah. Well, you're probably doing more varied things than I am.
Sure.
I guess is the best way to put it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll go down. So obviously we're all of course you can bet just straight up sides and totals, right? The spread, the money line, the total on the game. I think we're all familiar with that, and we're not going to get into crazy detail with any of this stuff, but the spread in the NFL is the toughest market to beat in betting. And any professional bettor will tell you the same thing. So don't get carried away on especially early on. But that is of course the traditional way that people bet football. If you had to split your action, a number of bets or money, you can whichever one you want to choose. How would you split college and NFL?
80-20 NFL.
Okay. Yeah, I'm about that, Sam. Yeah, that's probably accurate for me as well. There's regular fantasy football, right? So we'll get back to traditional betting first. We'll talk about a couple different vehicles. There's traditional fantasy football, which I've never really done for money. I know people that have been in. I know that it's a big thing. Either you buy in with some friends, or you buy in somewhere else. You're right. You know, winner gets money. Fantasy football, traditional fantasy football, the season-long fantasy, we had draft and everything, for me has been more of a social thing, and so I never really got into it with any sort of money or gambling, especially because there's just so much more variance in like how well you do, and there's so much luck involved. I know you can be good at fantasy and whatever. I get that. I've also I've had seasons where I had a killer draft. I've been an amazing general manager where I've just made really awesome trades. And then they're just like, you know, the players you play on any given week are just throw up duds. So, yeah, you don't do any fantasy anymore, right? You mentioned previously that you like were commissioned a couple, but
yeah, it's funny that you bring that up. So I have not done fantasy football in the last 2 years. I was just asked to join a league, and my default answer is no. But the people who asked me to join are not the sharpest. it's it's a sizable enough buy-in that it's worth a little bit of time. And okay. It's all about the waiver wire. It's all about the waiver wire. You could give me any draft position you want. Now, I guess the thing is, as life continues to get complicated, I have less and less time to spend on the waiver wire, but that's where you win. It's really, yep. You know, you could auto draft and, you know, let whatever software program you're using draft for you. If you can manage the waiver wire correctly, that's the whole game. I'm shocked to hear you say, though, that any of the leagues you were in were non-monetary based leagues. Like,
yeah,
it's a lot of, I mean, if you're going to do it right, it's a lot of time to spend for there to not be a payoff.
Dude, and you're absolutely right. And I remember sitting on, when I first moved to DC, I was so into fantasy football. It's probably when I was the most into it, when I first moved from Sacramento to Washington, DC. And I remember sitting in my furniture-less apartment with just, like, I think I had a blow-up mattress and stuff like that. And I was listening to fantasy-focused podcasts with Matthew Berry and Nate Ravitz. For anybody who's ever listened to that show, I was once in the man's league that they had way back when. I think it was 2012 or 2013. And got to actually participate in their little man's league thing. So that was a lot of fun. I remember sitting there and, like, just doing mock draft after mock drafts. I had three or four, like, for, like, as soon as I knew my draft position, I did a bunch. Oh man, I was so into it. And yeah, I can understand why you'd be surprised to learn that the only thing that I had in it was pride. No stake.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I had to be convinced to rejoin a league today. Otherwise, I would not have done it, because there's more money to be made betting the game. And, you know, daily fantasy actually became, I guess, similar to poker, in that it took something that I enjoyed and made me realize I'm just not good enough to hang with the really, really strong players. So,
yes,
right.
So that's a great segue into the other type of fantasy, right, with daily fantasy, which I think we all remember the year of the DFS commercials.
Yeah.
Where I think everybody was aware of what DFS was.
But it wasn't gambling then.
Oh, it wasn't gambling.
No,
never.
No,
never.
Wink, 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 nod, nod, nod,
wink,
nudge,
wink.
Nope, not gambling.
No, you bought in, and you often didn't win your money back, but it wasn't gambling. In its first year as a recreational player, you could do okay. Not great, but, like, you could do okay. Once those commercials hit, once everybody was in it, once people figured out the right way to monopolize on it, like you said, it was like poker, and you either knew what you were doing or you didn't. And as a recreational player, you would just get ate up by people who essentially, I mean, there's people who, like, DFS is how they make money, right? Like, they have you know, programming and all that sort of stuff to tell them the, you know, best value on players, etc. So, but there is DFS, and I know people who still do it. I guess there's golf DFS now, which I don't know was a thing when I first started playing. But I haven't played DFS in probably 3 or 4 years now. I'm not into traditional fantasy. I will help my wife with her team if she does it with her friends. And it would take a sizable, like you said, there's just more, I feel more confident in making wagers on the game itself than I would on a season long investment in fantasy. So it would take a certain type of buy-in with a certain type of people for me to consider that. And then there is what's called a 33 pool. Now people are like, wait, that doesn't, I've heard of those two. What's a 33 pool? Well, our friend Ed, who has called into other shows, and especially You Can Bet on That. In fact, this was introduced on on You Can Bet on That. I guess not introduced, but I first heard about this on You Can Bet on That. A thing called a 33 pool. Ed from New York has sent us some audio to tell us about it.
Living the better life certainly has to include being part of an NFL football pool. But if you're like me and you don't have the time or the inclination to follow the NFL, there's still a way to participate. It's called a 33 score pool. I first heard about this on the iconic You Can Bet on That podcast hosted by Mark Duvall and Dr. Mike. The way it works is each participant in the pool gets one team each week, and the object of the pool for the week is to have your team, your team's final score be exactly 33. And in addition to being 33, they have to win the game. So if you have the Jets for that week and they have 33 and the Patriots have 45, you don't win. However, if you have the Jets and they have 33 and the Patriots have 21, you win for that week. In our pool, the assigned team changes weekly. Some people run it where you get a team at the beginning of the year and that's your team for the whole year. With us, it changes every week. I think that's a much fairer way to play. And the way we do it is, at the beginning of the year, we list every participant's name alphabetically on a sheet of paper. We then take a stack of index cards and write the name of an NFL team on each index card. We then shuffle them up, and each participant will be assigned a team for that week. Now, because there's only 32 teams in the NFL, you're kind of limited to only having 32 participants. But because I like symmetry and this is a 33 score pool, I wanted to have 33 participants. So in addition to the 32 index cards, we now have a 33rd that says Zonk, and that's shuffled into the pile. That means that if the Zonk comes up next to your name, you're Zonked. You lose for the week. It's a fun thing. You get to break each other's chops on it. And I suggest if you do a pool, you do the same thing. Now, speaking of losses, if you have a bye for the week, that's the same as a loss. You lose. Let's talk about wins. If more than one person wins in an NFL week, meaning like week one, could be Thursday to Monday, no matter if they won on Thursday or Monday, it's the same NFL week. So if you have two winners, they split. It doesn't matter when they won during that week. They split for that week. And if there's no winners during the week, the money turns over to the following week. I think the most we had was a total of 4 weeks without a winner till we finally got winner.
So Eric, I know you've been in this pool. Ed's talking about.
I'm in this pool. Yep.
Yeah. I played the first couple minutes of Ed's audio, though, sort of briefly describing what it is, how it works, just sort of get that out of the way. There's some he continued on to talk about tips on like how to like pay people and collect money, stuff like that, and what he does with the extra money at the end of the season. I'll play that at the end of the show for anybody who's interested. So just listen sort of past the music, and the rest of his audio will be there on some extra tips on running a 33 pool. But right there, he gave us the basics on how it works. You get a team randomly, and if that team wins and scores 33 points, you win. And if anybody else has that, you split the pot. What is it usually week to week, Eric? What's the week-to-week buy-in?
There is no week-to-week buy-in. You buy it. Oh. You buy in for the season up front.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, you buy it for the full season up front.
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, I don't remember what the number. It's under $300 for the year. It's okay. I mean, there's literally no skill involved whatsoever. This is an exercise in flipping quarters, as Jeopardy James uses that expression, which I've stolen. I owe you a quarter, James. So it's one of those things that I'll be honest, I don't even pay attention. There have been, right. I've won three times, and meaning my team scored 33 points. So I cashed three times, and then we had that nice payout on the $14,000 hard six the 1 year.
Right.
But you know, Ed sends an email every week and I just kind of leave it in my inbox. I don't even look at it because, you know, I can't control it either way. So,
right.
You know, it just is what it is, but it's a lot of fun. And I'll tell you, I plan on attending, the Craps end of season. And, okay. And, you know, that's kind of, just like the regular fantasy football, I think the draft is more of what I get out of it. Like, you know, you have a draft party, maybe you have sticker girls.
Right.
You know, there's ways to make it like a fun time. I think the craps role at the end is really the big payoff for this league.
I imagine it's just another reason to watch the ticker right at the bottom of the screen. Right, as you're watching whatever game you're into and you're sort of watching the updates come about on other games you have action on, it's just one more game to kind of pay attention to.
So that's when I open the email. You know, usually it's on a it's on a Sunday and, you know, the ticker's going across and you see that a team hit 33. Then you look to see who had it. You know, sometimes you're shocked to find it's you and most of the time it's not.
and 32 out of 33 times it's not you. Going back to actually betting these before the season starts, and then for some of these as the season goes, there are futures and season win totals. Have you made any types of bet like that for college or NFL yet?
Yep.
What do you got? Are you willing to tell?
I've got under on the Bears. There are teams that have large following, and the bookmakers adjust the numbers knowing that the large following is going to be exuberant with the over, and usually there's a little extra value on the under.
Yeah.
Right? So that's generally my play. When I heard on VSiN that tickets on the Bears over was like at an astronomical level, and so I auto under.
Yeah, I am actually hoping I'm hoping that they like show some signs of. So right now they're under 9.5 with like heavy juice on the under. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that the over 9.5 with that plus money attracts some people as it gets closer to, and that evens out a little bit, and I can get the under 9.5 on. I've been looking at the Bears. I haven't made any bet. The only one I've made is Detroit Lions under 6.5. I just think they're not going to be good, and I think that we can speculate on personal lives all you want and how it affects the game. Matthew Stafford's wife has some serious health concerns right now, and you can't tell me that's not going to be the maybe one week to another. It doesn't really matter, but on weeks where maybe that's heavy on his mind, it's going to affect his play. You know. So not that I would want to capitalize on such things, but you have to consider everything that you can when you make a wager, and that's something to consider. And if the Lions being a 7-9 team just seems I can't see it. To make the playoffs or not,
I have no wagers on to make the playoffs.
Okay, the only one that I am looking at, Cleveland Browns to make the playoffs is -125. And I know there's a lot of hype around the Browns, but I think that division is going to be way more even than we're used to. I think that if the Browns play well enough, they could either win the division or possibly even contend for a wild card. The Seahawks +125 on the yes. Yeah, I like the Seahawks, both personally, and I think that they're going to be now with all the movement and, you know, the Legion of Boom's gone, stuff like that. We still have Russell Wilson, and he can win football games. So I think that the only way that they do it is through a wild card, but with some plus money, I'll back my team to make the playoffs. We'll cover these a little bit more and we'll go through a little bit more of our preseason bets as we get closer to it. As I noted, I didn't really prime Eric for this conversation, but when I listened to Ed's audio going into this, I was like, hey, we should maybe talk about ways that you can wager on the NFL, especially things you sort of have to like prepare for, get set up maybe before the season starts. Other things, of course, include Survivor Pool. Do you do Survivor Pools?
I have in the past. I don't have any this year.
Okay. We will likely have a Survivor Pool for the Better Life. I don't know, prize TBD. We'll probably do a buy-in, and then we'll do like a winner charity split like we normally do. Yeah. Do you do any preseason bets for college? Like not betting preseason, obviously, but like any bets before the season starts that you can only make before the season?
I haven't. There is one that's intriguing, though. I think it was at Westgate or South Point that put it out. Alabama and Clemson total losses over under 1.5. I like that one.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Which were you leaning?
Over.
Yeah. That's where I would go with that one too.
Yeah.
Very good. All right, Eric, you had a number of things. Like I was in the woods. I was not doing a whole lot of betting. I was doing a little bit on my as I was going through. I made just a couple wagers, but did not get a chance to get out to the casino. You sent over a handful of things that you would like to discuss. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the PyGow video on Twitter. So this is shared by The Edge. He's at Play With An Edge 1. August 4th, he put forth a video of a player at a PyGow table, incensed, screaming, furious that the dealer helped a player set her hand the house way. And he wanted her to lose. You don't get the very beginning, so I'm going to assume that she misset her hand. And he's calling for the floor because the dealer is setting her hand or assisting her with setting her hand. And he is screaming, screaming that the dealer is cheating for the player against the casino. And he eventually gets up and storms off. And, you know, we have these conversations regularly about, like, you know, mind your business. This was the ultimate mind your business that I've ever seen. I mean, it turned into a total shit show. And I hope I don't see this guy ever. I mean, it was awful.
This guy clearly doesn't listen to The Better Life, Eric. Otherwise he would have been informed going into this that you need to mind your business.
Mm-hmm.
What? So it's what you're saying is, so I'm actually just pulled up the video now and I'm watching it without sound, but I can kind of see in the interaction. So it seems like she, it's implied that maybe she fouled or didn't set her hand wrong. Dealer helps her reset it, and this dude's upset that she's not taking the L.
Right. So if I watched the video when it was shared, so we're a few days after that fact. But I seem to recall like him, you know, giving the floor a hard time, and the floor was like, "Look, for your first time, we let you reset the hand. It's not a big deal," and he wasn't having it. He wanted her chips in the rack, and that was the end of it. And, you know, there's a special place in hell for people like that.
No kidding. He's going to get down there, and Satan's going to be like, bro, mind your business, man. I mean, we got a poker game in the back, but you are not invited.
That's right.
That's right. Very good. Well, just another example of why you should mind it. I mean, that is a good way to make sure that the dealer doesn't offer to help you, right? Like, when you make a stink like that, like you said, usually on the first foul, the first mishap, whatever, they give it to you, whatever. I bet if you played for 4 hours and you made a mistake in the first half hour, and then you didn't make another mistake until the last half hour, but you were a very pleasant person, I'm willing to bet they might give you a second redo. But if you've been a dick the whole time, you think they're going to offer to set your hand if in that 4 hour that 4 hour session. You don't make the first mistake until the last like 20 minutes, but you've been a dick the whole time. You think they're going to offer to reset your hand?
No, to hell with you.
All right. So one thing I want to mention, one thing I did want to, in the latest episode of You Can Bet on Nat, there's a caller that talks about a buy-in that occurred in the middle of a roll, and that the shooter started going nuts on the boxman, who was checking out the, or who was dealing out the checks for the cash for the buy-in in the middle of the roll. And the converse in, you know, this inspired a conversation of like, you know, how do you respond to this sort of behavior? What was your gut response when you heard? I'm sure you've listened to that episode already. So, what was your gut response when you heard that story?
Look, it's a dick move to buy in the middle of the roll, but there's nothing else they can do. The money's on the table. They have to count it down. They have to cut the chips. If the shooter doesn't like it, it's too bad.
If I was the boxman, and I've seen this before, if I was the boxman, I'd get the cash and I'd say, go ahead and give him the dice. Right, let them roll, and then as the dealers are paying, it depends on how busy the table is. Right, the boxman has a job of supervising and watching things. But I have seen at a normal pace or even a slower pace or whatever. I've seen at some craps where they buy in, the boxman quickly gets the cash, tells them to pass the dice. The shooter rolls, and as soon as the roll is called, the boxman starts counting out the money and sort of does it in between rolls instead of holding up a roll. That was my first response of like, why didn't he just sort of do it? But I guess if it's a busy table, right? If there's a lot of payouts, he has to be paying attention to that as well, right? So,
His job, listen, he's overseeing the table, but the overlying responsibility for everybody is to get the money on the table.
Right.
Right? So now the cash is on the table. It's got to become chips. The chips become action. That's his job.
Yeah.
Could he have handled it differently? Yeah, I'm sure he could have handled it differently. There's always better ways to handle it.
Craps players just want a reason to blame the loss, right? Like, that's part of the superstition. Is not just the superstition. It's not that just they're superstitious and they believe this is how it happens, but it's this desire to blame something, right? To be able to say, that's why we lost, not because of chance, right? It wasn't chance that I lost. It's because this event happened. And they latch on to, you know, anything being too close to them. So, you know, them not getting the dice fast enough, where people buy in the middle of the roll, whatever it may be, someone trying to make a bet too late, all that sort of stuff. Part of it's superstition. Part of it is sort of etiquette and stuff like that. But for a lot of these people, it's just, they want something to blame. And I'm sorry, yelling at the boxman, I'd be like, as soon as that guy stepped out, I'd be like, get the fuck off my craps table. Like, go play over there. Like, I would not be able to be in that type of customer service. Lost baggage is probably the worst position in customer service in the world. Like, but, you know, places like that where people only come to you when they're in a bad mood or something bad has happened to them. But sometimes I see dealers deal with players and I'm like, man, this is not a customer service position I would be able to be in, because I'd be like, get off my craps table. You are not talking to me like that. I'm curious. Did you remember in the call? Did he say anything about how any other players were responding?
I don't remember.
I don't think.
That was last Thursday. I mean, it's gone by now.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Yeah. I guess it was last Thursday. Yeah. I listened to it more recently, but I don't recall the players. Would you have said anything?
I would have told the shooter to settle down.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so usually that falls under, you know, mind your business. But if he's going crazy and like he's disrupting the game. Yeah, I might have said settle down. Like it's a bit much, and the guy's just doing his job. You have to understand people are doing their job. Like,
yeah, I may not have said any. I'll admit I don't know if I would have said anything, but I definitely would have made a point to make a dealer bet right before the chips came out. Or like when they're getting ready to pass the dice, I would make a bet for the crew, like a few bets for the crew.
You would have made it a point for your hands to hang out over the table so that he's already irate. And
that's right.
Hit his dice,
and then I would have swatted the dice down and be like, "Fuck no!"
You would like Dikembe Mutombo with the
that's right.
With the finger wag.
Exactly. Like, no, not till you apologize. That's right. Anyway, so let that be a lesson, everybody. Don't mind your business, but when someone's being especially being a dick, yeah, maybe it's okay to let them know that maybe don't be so much of a dick. You have on here, let's go with free play and tier matching.
So the free play tier matching stuff just keeps popping up. So a couple of weeks ago, I went to Resorts World, and then I got a message. Hey, by the way, Encore Boston Harbor is doing a quasi tier match where they're giving you free play based upon the status that you have with another casino. And I still have quite a bit of free play from MGM Springfield to go back to get to. So this actually kind of ties in nicely. But for the higher tier cards, they're offering 500 in free play just to come back down.
Wow.
So, yeah. So let me get the right Twitter handle. So I hat tip. The guy's name is Dave Grossman, but let me make sure I have... So the hat tip goes to @MilesTalk. That's the name of his website. This guy's like a travel blogger, but he does a fair amount in the casino space, and he was the one that basically put it out there, because I haven't seen it in writing anywhere else, but it has since been confirmed. So MGM Platinum or Noir gets 500 in free play. Caesar Seven Stars gets 500 in free play. And if you have, I think, Soar from Mohegan Sun, that's 500 in free play. I don't know the tiers at Foxwoods to be able to mention it, but the New England casinos, you know, that's it's worth a trip for me. You know, I think I have 300 in comps with them, and now 500 in free play plus whatever the regular offer is, and I've got more than that at MGM Springfield. So, you know, I wasn't planning on going back so soon, but I guess I will.
I guess you will. Okay.
Yeah.
Anything else in the match tiering world, free play world?
You know what? Turning Stone, just that's an upstate New York property. I believe they're close to Albany. They just struck a deal with Caesars Entertainment, and now they're tier matching with Caesars. And you can even move your Caesars reward credits over to them, so you can have comps at their property. It's a lot of interesting. I don't want to call it commingling. It's really not commingling, but these different properties are giving access to one another. And you know what you earn at one, you can use at others. I mean, it's really it's turning into a. More than a one-off. You know, I wouldn't say it's regular or expected, but I'm not shocked by it anymore.
Yeah.
We're getting more and more of it on a regular basis.
Yeah. By the way, I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the My Choice Rewards program? Are you familiar with it?
Is that the...
That's Penn National?
I've never been. No. I don't know.
They have like Hollywoods. They have,
no, I don't, yeah, I don't like the Hollywood. What do they have? Tropicana in Vegas? Is that Penn National? I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I really don't like the Hollywood casinos.
Right.
I'm sure I have a card with them from somewhere. Was that the one that Boomtown,
Yes.
Represents.
I believe yes. so. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I have the most play at Boomtown. I'm honestly not familiar with whatever their tier based programs are. I don't know if they own Tropicana when I played it. I haven't been to Tropicana in years.
Okay.
Like I have no, like, I can't even think of a reason to go to Tropicana.
Yeah. Tropicana in Las Vegas, the M Resort, I guess. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
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 Mm-hmm. Yeah. What else? Hollywood, in a lot of areas, Cactus Pete's, Boomtown. Yeah. Okay. Ameristar, as well.
So I've been, I do like some Ameristar properties.
Okay.
Yeah.
Than that much. I mean, the only reason I asked, you know, I guess I've mentioned that I'm playing around with, you know, giving some action over to Hollywood and see if I get anything interesting out of them. I played a couple weeks ago. I plan on going out this weekend again on Saturday for like half a day, and playing again. I'm gonna adjust my play just a little bit. A stronger opening bet, stuff like that, and just see if it makes any bit of a difference on how I get rated and anything that comes through mailers and such. So we shall see. Eric, G2E is occurring during October, the week following the summit. I currently intend on going, and our friend and prior guest here on The Better Life, Scott Stratton, I believe, is presenting a keynote now at G2E, which Correct. Is pretty cool.
That's very cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And he even noted on Twitter, one of my bucket list events to keynote is coming October. So pretty cool that someone who I know has given hundreds of keynotes to still have sort of a list of events that he'd like to keynote at. And I'm glad he's going to get that opportunity. Hope to catch up with him at the Global Gaming Expo.
So I'm not saying that I'm going, but I'm not saying that I'm not going.
Good.
There's a number of things that are making it more likely. The problem that I'm having is I will definitely be attending the summit, which is prior.
Right.
And one would think, well, that just works out terrific. Then just stay, you know, for an extra 3 or 4 days. 7 days in Vegas is a long time.
It's a long time.
And I might even possibly fly away from Vegas right after the summit, only to come back a few days later, just because that might make more sense, both from a bankroll and a use of time perspective.
Yeah, I get you. Eric, you have on here the Win app. Now, I know our friend Adam Bauer did like a live stream on Twitch or something of him doing the Win app. I didn't get a chance to watch. I don't know if you did, Eric.
I did.
Okay.
So one of the most, and I spent Saturday night on my phone watching Adam play the Win app. And I've got buddies that are going out and doing stuff. And like one guy texted me, hey, what are you doing? And I was mortified to answer what I was actually doing on a Saturday night. But that's what I was doing. That's what I was doing in any event. Yeah. So for those that don't know, Wynn has an app kind of like MyVegas. And I'm assuming it's only slots. I've never actually played it. I watched Adam for a while the other night, and a number of people are talking about it. It seems like an awful lot of time for a free hotel room. Like,
yeah,
you know, so they said in the beginning it's not so bad, but then it gets, you know, as you ascend through the levels, it becomes increasingly more difficult to qualify for a free room. And When I asked how much time are you spending to get a free room, I don't know how much time they're doing a day, but you know, they were saying for their stay, it takes them about 30 days to earn what they need.
I'm sorry. Opportunity cost is too much for me.
100%.
That's way 100, too much for me.
100%.
And so I know that the My Vegas app isn't as lucrative as it used to be on getting stuff out of M Life, you know, and MGM. But I will open the app and just put and just hold the free spin and then set the phone to the side and then do stuff. So like I kind of passively play it from time to time and just little stuff. Like I'll get enough and then I'm like, oh, okay. Next time I go to MGM, I can swing by and grab a piece of pizza or something like that. Like I'm not playing for like that free room or, you know, anything significant. I may actually put that a little bit more into my routine since, knock on wood, Gamblepalooza, will hopefully be in Biloxi next year. I may, more routinely passively play My Vegas apps so that way, try to take advantage of any offers at Beau Rivage. But, I feel the same way. Like, the opportunity cost would just be a little too much for me.
Right. Like if it worked, like, I don't want to shit on it. If it works for you, it works for you. I'm legitimately happy for you if it's a good use of your time.
Right.
Just I don't particularly enjoy slots. So to watch slots where there's no money to be made. And, you know, we're talking about drips of value to get towards a free hotel room when
if it was an hour a day to play craps on my app, maybe, or blackjack or something that I actually enjoyed, right? Like a game that like I would likely play at the casino, I would be more likely to want to put the time into playing that.
But if there's no action, is that even enjoyable?
No, but I'm thinking of more times where like I get home from work and I'm just like I'm taking 15 minutes to decompress on the couch, and instead of scrolling through Twitter or whatever it is I would be doing or whatever, I'm playing. I don't know. I'm thinking of like those times where you just pull out your phone because you're bored. But you're right. After a while, after like day three or four, you're like, what is this? This isn't like, I don't know. Be kind of start. I would parlay every hard six. I know we're coming into crunch time, Eric. Let's see here. What's the last thing you got here? Win at G2E. Oh, no, we've covered it all. Patreon.com/thebetterlife is where you can support the show. Thank you, everybody who supports us over there. I'm going to drop a couple bonus audio clips that I've been holding on from the past few episodes that I haven't posted there yet. So there will be actually a couple bonus audios there. So thank you, everybody who supports us there. Look forward to that. Tip your cocktail waitresses, tip your dealers, tip the people at the cage, and tip your favorite podcast hosts. Well, let's wrap up, Eric, with an email that we got from a listener, James. First off, gentlemen, I'm a new listener and absolutely love the podcast. Both of you have a nice flow and everything is extremely informative and entertaining. Well, thank you, James. Hopefully you felt that way about the half hour of soccer talk last week. I have three questions. I am comped at Tropicana for 4 nights with no resort fees, or I can stay at Caesars for 4 nights for $225 all in. Thoughts? What are your thoughts on that? I'd take the comped room.
Depends on what you plan on doing on the trip. Caesars is center strip. Tropicana is, you know, south.
If paying $225 to be at Caesars in the center strip, like if that is convenient for you, that's worth considering.
But also, how much walking do you feel like doing? Caesars is a massive property.
So massive. And like not only it's a property, but like getting to another property, right? Like
right.
It itself is a massive property. Then just to get somewhere else, right, is a whole other set of walking.
Right. It can regularly be 15 minutes to get from your hotel room to the front door.
Right. I personally, without knowing what your agenda or what you're trying to be doing, I would take the comp room at Tropicana, but that's me.
I probably agree.
Yeah. I'll be staying downtown Fremont. What would you choose between Pizza Rock and Evil Pie? I don't know if anybody has seen this thing, like a picture floating around, screen grab of someone leaving a review on Yelp, and then the owner of Evil Pie making a obscene remark to the gentleman who left a Yelp review. But I've only been to Pizza Rock. I've never been to Evil Pie. I can tell you that I liked Pizza Rock and that it was good. And after seeing the jackassery of the owner of Evil Pie, I'm probably very unlikely to go there. So those are my thoughts. Eric?
So I think Pizza Rock is good. I don't think it's great like many others do, but I've never had bad food there. And I agree. Brandon P., the owner of Evil Pie, I'm not coming back to your establishment. I mean,
yep.
And you know, this came right on the heels of the guy from Frank's Tiki, kind of going above and beyond also. Like when the owners of the establishment, and let me be clear, I certainly think the owners should be able to defend their business and to be able to speak up. And especially when customers are being unreasonable, there's no reason to go down this road. And it just shows that you have no class and I have no interest in giving you my money.
Yeah. You could, you know, stand your ground, but don't be petty, you know. Last, the wife only lets me gamble once every month. How do you guys do it? Please teach me the ways and secrets. So this is a great question, James. One that I think deserves a little bit more discussion than what Eric and I actually have time for. So I am going to hold this for next week. Eric, it has been a pleasure talking to you. Next week, I am hoping that a familiar voice from the podcasting scene will join us. I'm not going to say who it is just so I don't jinx the opportunity to get them available. But
Does he have two capital letters in his last name?
All right, just stop it. Like everybody knows who we play well with and who people who we've never paid any mind to. So it's not too difficult to figure out who might be on that list. Vito isn't doing podcasting right now, so it's clearly not him.
Wait, are you suggesting you play well with Vito?
That's fair. Fair point. Yeah. Fair point. Eric, it's always a pleasure talking to you, sir.
Likewise.
I'm Timothy Lawson. On behalf of Eric Rosenthal, good night and good luck.
So if you've been following along and you've been able to put up with my Brooklyn accent and you're paying attention, you're probably saying, well, what happens if at the end of the year you have 1, 2, 3 weeks where nobody won? What do you do with the money that's left in the pool? That's a very good question. And we addressed that. During the first year, we said, okay, we're going to have to do something if there's money left. And we decided that if there was any money left, we would take whatever's in the pot. And since we're in the Northeast, we were going to go down to Atlantic City and we were going to place the entire amount, one bet, on the hard six and craps. The hard six is a 3 and a 3. Again, 33. 33 is the score, 33 participants, 33 hard six. So, first year, we didn't have much. I think it was the stakes to get in were lower and we only had 16 people in the pool the first year, not 32. And each person got two teams. And we went down to Atlantic City and we played the hard six. We hit the six, but we hit an easy six, so it didn't work. The second year, we had some more money left in the pool. We had 1,400 in the pool, and we went down and we placed it on the hard six, and we hit, and we took away 14,000, which is 9-1 plus the original bet, 14,000. And if you want to hear about that, that episode 148 of the You Can Bet on That podcast. Year three, we had money left again. We went down to Atlantic City, and not only did we not hit the hard six, we got slaughtered at the table that day. Oh my God, me and all my buddies, we got destroyed. Anyway, this is year four, and we're hoping to get a win again at the tables. And the reason I say that, you might say, well, how does he know there's going to be money left in the pool at the end of the year? Well, regardless of whether there is money left from the weekly bets, what we do is we do a little enhancement. Not only do we put money in the pot at the beginning of the year for each game, we put a little something extra so we guarantee that we have an excuse to go down to Atlantic City and do the hard six bet. And not only do we put some money in for the hard six, we put a little smaller amount for the hard four, the hard eight, and the hard 10. So it's a little enhancement to make the pool a little more interesting. If you decide you want to do a pool like this, let me suggest that you use Venmo. Do not do cash. I had a problem. One time I paid somebody, and months after the football season was over, the person came to me and says, "Hey, you never paid me for the pool." I said, "Yes, I did pay you. I remember where I paid you and when I paid you, and I have it all written down how much you were paid." He says, "No, you never paid me." I honestly believe he does not think that he was paid, even though he was. So bottom line is, I ran the pool. I had to shell out the money and pay him again. So use Venmo. It'll be in there. You'll have a record of what, no one could say they paid you or they didn't get paid. It's probably the best way to do that. Also, if you're going to do the pool, get all the money up front before the season starts. I mean, I've had situations where we're at week 5, 6, and I am still chasing people for money. One guy didn't pay me till just about Super Bowl time. I don't do that anymore. I have a strict deadline. If you don't have the money in by the deadline, I'm sorry, you can't be in the pool. I have a long waiting list of people who want to get in, and that's the rules. As a matter of fact, I culled the list this year, and people that I had to chase and all people that gave me a hard time, I took them out, and I added a few new names to the list. Matter of fact, I even jumped some names on the waiting list to put some people in. Anyway, that's what it's all about. If you have any questions, you could tweet them to me, ed@scan720 on Twitter, @scan720, and I'll be happy to answer them for you. Be well.